mean, you've been putting in work for so long.
Putting a lot of work.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to Putting in Work, episode 71 of the interview podcast on the 8-Bit Collective, powered by Audio Technica. I'm your host, John O'Peck, and this week we have Jarrett Green on the show, which we'll get to soon. But for now, the iTunes review of the week. It's the last one I have. So if you have any thoughts or feedback out there, you want to help the show, leave a rating, leave a review, and it'll definitely get read on the show. This one comes from Juju59. It says, "Fantastic job, Jono. You're doing a great thing with this podcast. Subscribed and looking forward to more stories." Thank you very much. So a while ago, I put a call out on Twitter for suggestions of future guests, and a good friend of the show, Logan Wilkinson, suggested his input co-host, Jarrett Green, who is also a freelance writer who's had his work on video games published in PlayStation Lifestyle, IGN, Playboy, a whole lot of other publications, but mostly the place he calls home on the internet, it's irrationalpassions.com. And you might recognize that name from previous guest Alex O'Neill, who's heading up that site. And it's very timely to be putting this episode out because at the time that I interviewed Jarrett, he actually gave me some really great advice about freelancing for IGN for an article I've been working on. It's now up on IGN.com if you want to check it out. The headline's something like "How Video Games Changed My Views on Parenthood." And it's been really cool to see people reacting to that all over the internet. There's a lot of positive feedback, which is great to see, especially when you put so much time into a piece like this. So Jarrett's also an accountant, so you know that his perspective is going to be a little different to most people who write about video games. He's a real intellectual thinker, and I think he comes at games and freelancing in a really interesting way. It was great to talk about what he's learned from doing this for so long, many, many years, and the importance of knowing the website's identity that you're pitching to, the different perspectives that are after, the different kinds of angles that articles will be tailored to depending on the website. So here's Jarrett Green. Enjoy the show. Thank you for joining me, Jarrett. It's great to have you on the show.
No problem. Good to be here.
This is at the request of friend Logan Wilkinson, who said I had to get you on here. And, you know, I respect what Logan says, so I thought, sure, why not?
Good old Logan Wilkinson. That's a guy.
Yeah, co-host of Input. So how's Input coming along?
It's good. I feel like we have finally a group of people who we definitely know are listening, or we just need to get them to sort of, I guess, interact more, I think, a little bit. Send us emails, get involved, but yeah. They're there, so I'm
excited. Always a challenge of podcasting is the making it a two-way medium, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the worry, is like, is anyone listening to this? Is it, what's the point? Is it just three people talking to each other? And I feel like we've reached a point now where we at least know there's people out there who'd be willing to listen to it. We just got to get to them.
Yeah, that's it. And I guess, like, you have to be content with the conversation itself being, you know, rewarding enough that if you did discover that no one was listening, you still enjoyed what you did for the last hour and a half or whatever it was.
Yeah. It can't always be, you know, what are the returns necessarily. And it's not like we put a whole lot of financial investment into it. We're kind of, I mean, it's really just our time, and we're talking about things we'd be talking about together anyway, I think. So we might as well dress it up and record it. I guess the assumption we came to when we started Input anyway.
Sure. So Input, a product of irrationalpassion.com. We'll get to that in a minute, but I'm interested how you ended up with those guys. You mentioned before we were talking that you're an accountant. So
yeah.
I take it that I guess writing and journalism wasn't a avenue that you pursued professionally before getting into video game writing?
Not professionally. I know when I was younger, it was a thought, like, well, what would I do for the rest of my life in high school? You always kind of wonder what you can see yourself doing in 20 years. Like, what is high school version of me think 40-year-old version of me is doing? I left high school with the idea that if I was going to do something like journalism or writing, or really something that going to school and studying professionally isn't necessarily like the greatest guarantee to be doing it, I could probably find a way to do it without going to school. So I figured if I'm going to go to school, I need to learn something, some sort of skills that'd be difficult to learn without it. Something, I guess, more pragmatic. So I went to school for accounting with the idea that I don't necessarily need to go to school for journalism to learn how to write and to learn the tenets of journalism necessarily. Also, I was confident I wouldn't be doing like political blogs or something like that, even though that's an interest of mine. I felt more confident writing about the things I knew way more about or felt like an authority in, and that was, you know, turned out now it's just a bunch of nerd stuff.
yeah.
So I felt like, you know, I could do that in my free time because those are conversations I want to have anyway. So I started writing personally. I'd never had like a personal blog. I was always like trying to find places who were looking for people to write for them. Most of it was, I mean, for the years, it was basically like, we can't pay you, but we'd have a site and maybe we can get a code or something every once in a while. But if you have things to say, say it. So that's kind of where I started. So I didn't require much professional input or professional, I guess, studying in my end because they weren't paying me. But doing is its own sort of education, I think.
Definitely, yeah. Like as someone that I did study journalism and had offers to work before I'd finished studying, like there really isn't a need to have that qualification, but
there isn't.
It's worthwhile to have, but it's not essential by any means. And I certainly know a lot of good writers, a lot of good journalists that didn't study. So it's, you know, it's quite different from, like you said, accounting and that kind of thing where you can't just walk into an accountant's and start doing it if you haven't had that preparation.
I think, though, I do sort of, if I could do it again, I may actually go to school for journalism because I feel like the skills you can learn, I think, without necessarily the book education. But I think even half-decent schools that have that program put you on the tracks for working early and often. And that's the most important thing I've noticed here. It's like how much work you're doing and the opportunity to get that work. And I feel like in a journalism school, you're being put in a good position to work, whether you're, you know, learning the best ways to write and find news and follow up on contacts or whatever, identify ethics or whatever. Like, even if you're learning those things, the most important thing that's happening in a journalism school is like them setting up or giving you opportunities to contact people and giving you many, many opportunities to go report on things and get your name out there and some work before you leave the university or whatever.
I think like the internships and those kinds of placements are really like the most essential part of them. For me, that was definitely what set me up to walk into jobs after graduating. And a lot of other people, I guess, didn't because they hadn't had that same focus.
Yeah.
So you studied accounting, you started working as an accountant, and all the while you've been writing. How did you, I guess, get into pitching stories to professional websites? Like, you know, I've seen by looking at your Twitter bio, you've had some stuff published by IGN, by Playboy, by some other fairly big websites. So how did that kind of come about?
For me, literally just cold calling via email because I don't go to many of the conventions because they're basically all on the West Coast and that's an expensive flight to do a couple times a year. So I don't have a whole lot of face time with the industry people that would be easier to, I guess, start a rapport with if you met and shook hands with. Really, the only time I see them is when they come over here for PAX East because Boston's not that far away from me. But yeah, literally, it's like I had an idea, especially I got lucky. My first big pitch was at IGN, but I literally had an idea, sent the pitch to Justin Davis there at the time who was doing that. He was handling the freelancers for features and it worked. And I was like, well, good. I guess hopefully it's always this easy. It isn't, but I had been doing at that point, I'd been writing forever already. So I kind of had work and I kind of had the reps and developed a voice and developed a sort of style that gave me enough of a presence where I didn't necessarily need to know Justin to assure him that I could write 800 words about this thing I'm talking about. I had clips. But yeah, literally just emailed him. Here's this idea. And it worked because I identified that it was about Mortal Kombat at the time. And it was doing lots of traffic on IGN. I could tell just by the amount of stuff they were writing about it. At the time, a lot of the stories were positioned on the website based on traffic. You could see like the sort of heat map on the side and like Mortal Kombat was always in your tops. And I'm like, well, I had this idea that no one's writing about, but it looks like IGN has a lot of traffic about it. This might work. thinking about how the biggest video game company in the world or video game media company in the world would think, they want to capitalize on the traffic that's already there. So this is the kind of story they'd be interested in. So let me try it. And it worked. For Playboy, it's completely different. I just had the Playboy was just starting to do games coverage on their website. And they were looking for big reported sort of features, but also sort of small, I guess, maybe more evergreeny indie or just like singular video game sort of op-eds. And I was already doing some of that too. So I wasn't doing the big sort of reporty stuff that guys like Aaron Garster or Dave Jack and I were doing. But I did have, not maybe the previews, like, but like more like creative, clever, like hands-on-y sort of features that I was doing. So that happened to be what another dimension of what Playboy was looking to do at the time, because they were young and they were kind of just trying to do everything. So it worked then too. So really a lot of me getting into these bigger places, me just capitalizing on sort of like a space I saw more than me sort of being a guy that people at that level in the industry kind of know. You ask any freelancer and they're probably going to tell you a version of the same thing. You have to spend a lot of time reading websites and thinking about how these websites and these editors think, and then trying to like give them something that they're not thinking about.
Hmm. Did you find that those publications, like getting stuff published, opened up opportunities to work with others? Like, is that something that you can point to and say, hey, I've worked with these guys, or you could publish more stuff with those, or you could pitch stuff more to those companies because they know you and they've published you before? Or is it not exactly that way?
It helps depending on who you're pitching, but I think what really helps more than that is that you are working recently. So I'm probably like a year and a half removed when right before Playboy basically stopped doing games coverage. I want to say that was about a year and a half ago is the last time I was at a site that big. So it helps that the byline's there completely, but if I'm going to pitch something today, I find that editors are more interested in what I did this month or sometimes as recently as possible. It helps when you're pitching something that's out of the norm of what you do and you want to prove that you've done it already. Like if you want to do reviews, you want to pitch your review concept, but you want to give them clips for reviews. And if you have like a review at a big site, then that means you can work under big site rules, which is not the same as small site rules. Usually there's other factors. I find it helps me get looks from smaller sites and oddly enough foreign sites. I'm not US based basically. Sure. Than it does, like it hasn't helped me so far getting into other bigger places. But the fact that it exists and it's there, you can Google it, it helps, you know. It allows me to put it on my business card, which is a conversation starter at least.
Yeah, right. And if we can backtrack a little bit, what was it that got you from working as an accountant and, you know, occasionally, I don't know if it started as an occasional thing or if you went straight into it, but just writing to the point that you built up this skill to a professional level that you could pitch to those kinds of sites?
Well, I kind of asked myself, was I content really just kind of writing for no one, for myself?
Where were your pieces appearing at that time?
At that time, I don't even remember the places. Like, I think there was one site called Go Critic that was started by someone who is now in dev, or at least was in dev. I don't know if they still are anymore. But she had written a couple of books and wanted to start a site for really like pen and paper RPG sort of, I guess, conversations and features. But that sort of opened into video games. And it did some traffic. It wasn't necessarily a big deal, and it's definitely not around anymore. But that was one of the first. I wrote a bunch for back when IGN had the that social sort of platform.
Yeah, the like community blogs or whatever.
Yeah, I had written a community blog that got put on the front page, and that's when I realized like I could probably just write an article and get on the front page. Yeah. And maybe they'll actually pay me for it. I feel like that was definitely one of the moments when I was like, this was good enough for free. And there are factors I can see I identify in this piece that I could see an editor saying this would work on our site because of X, Y, and Z. And I think I could do that again. And that was like, let me challenge myself to do it again. And then I did. And it worked. And I'm like, well, it's different now. Like, I can get paid for this. So maybe I should try a little harder too. So everything at that time, I want to say that was probably 4 or 5 years ago, was pointing at me and saying, maybe you should like pursue this. Even if you can't, you know, fly out to San Francisco and be in the rooms and be the guy, clearly there's work here to be done. And I think you're showing yourself to be qualified to do it.
That's cool. And how did you cross paths with Irrational Passions? Because I imagine that that's been more or less kind of your home base in between being freelance articles over the past couple of years.
Years ago, back when Beyond was still like a small show on IGN, hosted by Greg and Colin, and I guess maybe Andrew at the time. Probably not Andrew at the time. Probably
Ryan Clements.
Maybe Clements. I'm trying to remember what time period this was. It wasn't Roper, so it was probably Clements. Alex had met Greg, I guess maybe sometime that year or the year prior, and they had talked about his website, and for some reason they got to talking about people in the community who are trying to work and be in a business. Cause they were answering one of those, like, how do I get into business questions?
Sure.
And I guess just spur of the moment, Greg mentioned Alex and mentioned his website and that he was looking for people to like start turning his website at the time, which was basically just a home base for their podcast, into something more editorial. And I immediately sort of responded to the email, and Alex responded back, and we started talking. It wasn't very long afterwards that I started writing stuff for them, and the rest is history, really. I used a lot of those early pieces as things to pitch to places like IGN and Playboy. So the early stuff gave me like a really good base to show that I'm writing often, and I can write long, I can write short, I can write features, I can write interviews. That gave me an opportunity, since Alex was just kind of here to have people write necessarily with any direction, just do you. It gave me an opportunity to start doing stuff I didn't have opportunities to do before, and like learning how other sorts of writing works. It really helped me sort of flex my muscles. But that was, God, 5 years ago, maybe longer than that. So I've been around since. I've outlasted two different editorial teams, so I'm like the last remnant of that, I think.
Apart from the fearless leader,
yeah,
Mr. Alex O'Neill.
Yeah, that old team was interesting. So Alex has been very, very vital to helping me sort of develop a voice and develop a style, learn the ropes. Yeah. And we just became pretty good friends over the years. I like working with him. He's allowed me to try new things using, you know, whatever rub I can get from Rash Passion to do so. It's really introduced me to a lot of people that I probably wouldn't have met otherwise. We're very good friends. Very grateful for Alex O'Neill.
That's cool. Yeah. Solid dude. I'm curious though, like when you have an article you want to pitch to, say, IGN or Playboy or whatever it is it a decision you have to make? Does this belong on Irrational Passions? Is this something I can pitch to a more professional website that will pay me for it? Or is it repurposing content that you have already published? Like, how does that part of it work?
For me, it's definitely, I'll take a concept and I'll think, all right, could this be pitched? The last thing I wrote for Irrational Passions, I went through this. I wrote a feature about Kratos and how Kratos,
the God of War mythology piece.
Yeah, how the mythology he's written in informs his character, and you can see the similarities in these different Kratoses in Norse and in Greek myth. I thought, this is like a concept. This is something I can see the end of. I have a full thought. I have an outline. Could I pitch this somewhere? And that I'm looking around at websites. Who would take this? Who would be interested in this? And wrote like a little list. I thought maybe Polygon would be sort of interested in this. Maybe IGN maybe wouldn't be, because I don't think it's big enough. I don't know that you would really want, they were doing lots of God of War content already, and you'd want probably some primary contacts to more fill in some gaps there. I don't know that it's large enough or heady enough for The Verge. Like, you kind of have to take your pieces and identify what makes some of these video game websites particularly special, and then see if there's a version of this piece that works for that website. You gotta like identify what these websites' core concepts are. And I realize like maybe this could work in some places, but the places that I think it could work, I don't have really any rapport with any of the editors. Like, I'd have to work really hard to get them to even look at it. And then by that time, we're talking about a game that's been out for probably a couple weeks that doesn't have the same relevance.
Sure.
So I kind of just wrote it. Then I realized, like, I kind of would rather put it where I put it. Like, I think a rash patch is a good place for it, because I don't have to necessarily worry about adapting my thesis around, like, any other website. I can kind of just speak about what I'm saying the way I want to say it. And I think it's good to do that sometimes.
Yeah, I guess, like, having a level of independence there. They're kind of like an indie recording studio or an indie game developer. Like, they're not going to tell you it has to have this particular spin. Alex is just going to say, write the story that you want to write, and we'll make sure that it's good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it's good for the website. We do a lot of stuff at Irrational Passions, especially now since we have a way bigger team than we've had in a while. So we're ready to do all types of stuff, and I feel like our website should have as many different looks as possible as far as content is concerned, because we're not competing necessarily with other people. We're just out here doing stuff. So I don't know that we should just be a preview website or a review website. Like, we should be able to write these sort of features too. So when Logan writes features about Bloodborne, but he does it in sort of like a first person narrative sort of take, I think that's valuable to Irrational Passions, more valuable to Irrational Passions than it would be anywhere else. Like, even if he could get that on Kotaku, like, how does that help? That would seem strange at Kotaku.
Yeah.
where in Irrational Passions, it's just one of the many things we're willing to do out here.
Sure. So how do you build on, I guess, what you've managed to do both at Irrational Passions but also in freelancing? Like, is there a path that you can see yourself on and that's leading somewhere, maybe even trying to pursue full-time work or full-time freelancing, if that's an option?
It's difficult because, I mean, full-time freelancing is a thing that I've thought about a lot, because there are some really good freelancers who found a way to make a living doing this. Is it the, you know, most amazing living? Maybe not, but it's the idea is you don't necessarily have to move to the Valley to work in Gaines Media.
Yep.
You can do it so long as you've been working to get the contacts and you've stayed busy, you can do it. I still haven't unlocked that sort of door yet. I still don't understand how it has worked for some people. it's definitely a mystery to me, but it's one I've been looking harder into, especially this year. I don't know if I can see like a direct sort of line into some sort of end goal sort of job situation, because since I started writing, and even when I started getting paid, the industry's changed a lot. There, you know, the quote unquote pivot to video is a big real thing. And lots of outlets that had the space to do this kind of work don't anymore. A lot of outlets that would have been perfect, I think, for me are gone. So it's like, I don't really know. I am definitely a couple steps behind some of the better freelancers here. So I got to do a lot of work to catch up. But I think about it, you know, me versus some maybe younger, more in touch freelancers. And I think, man, like, how do I even start? Like, how do I even begin to catch up? But then I think about it and I'm like, well, Mike Martin started freelancing at 35 and 4 years later he works for Capcom. So like, there is no, you know, and Seth Macy just got hired full time at IGN. So the time in your life, you being too late to start or too late to make it work or turn it around and find a focus is becoming more and more, being proven wrong more and more, I think. So I don't necessarily feel like I did 2 years ago where I'm like, I don't really know how this works. Like, could I even turn this around? I don't know. To the point now where I'm like, well, maybe I should just be thinking, broadening what the end goal could be. It isn't working at IGN or GameSpot probably, but it could be doing something else that I'm not seeing yet, or maybe haven't had an opportunity to sort of come across, you know, my sort of scope here. It's out there probably. It's probably just not sitting down and being review guy.
Yeah, well, I think like you mentioned, maybe IGN and GameSpot not being the place, but there seems to be similar to, I guess, what Playboy were trialing and have done away with, but websites expanding to include video game coverage, whether it's Rolling Stone with Glixel and HBO have got the Ringer website that does some cool games coverage every now and then. And just, I guess, sites diversifying and realizing that games are a topic people want to read about. So if they're doing entertainment coverage, they'll, you know, eventually realize that, hey, we can get someone in here that knows what they're talking about, knows how to write, and can bring in some traffic. So I guess there's always going to be increasing opportunities in that regard, even if they are drying up in other areas.
Yeah, and you have to be, as a freelancer, sort of flexible to what these sort of demands would be. I know one big trend in video games writing that's really blowing up now is esports coverage.
Yeah, absolutely.
It requires someone who may have hoped to just be a guy who wants to wax poetically about JRPGs to turn into a person who has to watch some esports. You know, maybe you have to watch Overwatch then, because there are people out there paying you for recaps or for analysis or for interviews with these players, but they want people who aren't just watching it cursorily. They want you to be engaged in the community and all that kind of stuff, because different between us and like sports, traditional sports, is, you know, you can't watch a soccer game. I mean, you could then go outside and play soccer, but anyone watching Overwatch can play Overwatch and then identify with what they just saw, because they can then use techniques they saw a pro use and try to mimic and emulate. Like, there's an attachment or a relationship between esports professionals and the casual esports player that doesn't exist with other sports. That creates a bridge. So now you not only do you have like this old esports professional wing of coverage you can cover, you can also now get back in these communities who are playing this game and cover that too. So there's opportunities there for sure. It's just figuring out how to get to those opportunities, because it turns out a lot of the people who are making the transition into esports coverage are people who really have been doing everything everywhere. So I run into the same problem. Like, how do I out network the best, well networked people? And it's difficult. But I don't necessarily feel that it's so difficult that it's discouraged me completely. It's just like, I got to identify, like, this is what I have to do. I got to figure out how I'm going to do it.
Sure. Yeah. It's funny to think that a website like ESPN could be hiring video game writers at some stage.
Yeah.
It's probably not that crazy to imagine,
I mean, not anymore, but I can't imagine. Like, the first time there was esports coverage on ESPN, it was a big deal.
Yeah, people went nuts.
Because people were like, why? Like, what is this? Mostly, like, some of the older journalists at ESPN were like, what are we doing? Like, why would we do this?
Yeah. I remember Colin Cowherd was kicking up.
Yeah, he made it. He made it basically the end of his ESPN career that way, and before he moved to Fox. But yeah, that was like a shtick for like a year.
But I mean, if things are following where the money goes, then esports makes sense, even in games coverage and the crossover there.
Yeah, and I think esports has big potential, even if it's not like the biggest of spectator sports. You know, I think that will dry up eventually, or that'll balance out, I should say. But there's a lot of room there untapped for like sponsorship, and how do you turn these kids and adults into like characters and... There's lots of the things we do with other sports that hasn't been done.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. What would you say has been the hardest part of getting to where you are? I guess building up a portfolio of work and feeling, I guess, confident enough to know who to pitch to and when the right time is to do that.
That's kind of it. The hardest part is getting the next big sort of job, even if it's not a big job, beginning the next job that isn't me just writing for myself. I always want to be progressing professionally, and I find that it's easy to look at your sort of clients and say, all right, this is, I'm doing enough. It's not, I know that this is not something that I rely on to pay my overhead, to pay my bills. So I'm really just doing this to do it, but I don't want to just, I don't want to do it for free necessarily. You could just find yourself in this sort of state of, you can be content with the fact that you're getting paid a little bit for it, and that's fine. But I don't, it's constantly reminding myself that I'm doing all this work, and I could be using, this work could be, this could be using, like, I could be using this to get somewhere else. It's always like remembering that, yes, this is a difficult business to get into for lots of reasons that are out of my control, but you got to remember the reasons that are in your control. You know, how many pitches have I sent? How hard am I trying here? Is the last thing I wrote for a site the best thing I could have written for that site? Trying to keep motivated, because really no one out here is looking for you specifically. Like no one's looking for Jarrett Green. I got to find the people who are looking for anyone and convince them that Jarrett Green's the guy. And there have been plenty of opportunities where I've pursued it and it just didn't work for them. And there's plenty of opportunities where I didn't pursue it at all or didn't pursue it hard enough and it could have worked for me. So it's remembering that, like, after putting in 40, 50 hours in my full-time job, that, like, I have to go home, and it's, yes, I'm tired, and yes, I have all these other things to do, but, like, this has to be something I have to want to do too. And I'm only going to get out of it what I put into it. And it's going to suck that I got to put so much into it to get so little out, but that's kind of how this works until it somehow opens up for me.
Interesting, yeah. I guess that's just all part of putting in the work, is that it takes a long time to get, sometimes not very far, but that's how it goes.
Yeah, and for me, it's like, it's always been lots of work, not getting really far, and then suddenly I'll get farther than I thought I could. And then you kind of stand still again and try to, like, you try to figure out what worked and how can I do that again, and realize, like, it was never that easy. Maybe I got lucky, blah, 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 blah. And you got to try to, like, the hard work is, like, knowing that week after week after week you're getting these stories done, trying to get ideas for pitches or whatever, trying to stay motivated to do all that, and knowing that, like, sometimes it might just involve getting lucky again.
Yeah. And it's the same kind of thing where you turn around and you realize that all those little bits that you've progressed have taken you quite a long way over the time.
Yeah, you have to sit and be both realistic about the challenge in front of you, but, you know, realistic about what you did and get what really got you here. Like, it is the little stuff. It is the work you've been doing that was middling for very little money or whatever that creates this sort of body of work that when people do look at you, they say, all right, this guy is doing something. You can't let the fact that you haven't struck gold get you down, really.
Sure. Got to keep panning for gold. So what would be your advice to people that want to freelance or maybe pitch something that they've got an idea for or they've written already?
You have to keep your expectations realistic, firstly. Like, never approach, like, you know, I've met a lot of people who say, you know, I'm going to work at IGN one day. And that is something that could happen. But you have to recognize what IGN's looking for. And that might not be your 1,000 words on Kingdom Hearts. They have plenty of people who have plenty of words for that already there. You have to know that you have to know these sites that you've been reading, these people, these authors, these writers, these journalists that have inspired you and sort of motivated you to do what they do. You have to know who they're writing for, what these sites are looking for, how these sites are different from each other, the kind of work they do. You have to identify and be willing to continue to identify what makes these places different, because that's going to help you identify what you can do for them. And recognize that, yeah, writing is about expression and it's about analysis and about critique, but it's also about, when it comes to getting paid for it anyway, what you can do for these people who are looking for you. But you have to market yourself whether you want to or not. You have to be valuable to them. I think it's very difficult for any freelancer walking in saying, I want to write about games to just that. Maybe a big problem I have is, like, getting into streaming and getting into, like, video stuff, because that is what is prominent and dominant in video games nowadays. And the thing I just said is knowing what these sites want and knowing how you can make yourself valuable to them, that's how you do it. And I just haven't done it. And that's part of the reason why I'm not probably, you know, flying out to LA or San Francisco. But you have to be realistic about what they want and be willing to do those things. You don't have to necessarily compromise yourself. I'm not saying write listicles that are vapid and things that are just wrong. Or I'm not saying, you know, try to sensationalize stuff just to hopefully capitalize on a particular outlet's, like, I don't know, pension for that kind of thing. Like, write you be you, but recognize that you being you also has to be you being valuable to someone else. And that takes an analysis that isn't necessarily creative. It isn't necessarily soul fulfilling. It's a cold hard analysis a lot of times. I think the accounting part of me got that down pretty early. Like, you have to really just divide these things into usable parts and figure out what these parts are. So before you write, you know, any article, before you write a pitch, before you write an outline, recognize, like, what kind of writer you want to be and if there's an outlet for something like that.
Yeah.
And can you be multiple different types of writer, because there's multiple different outlets for something like that.
It's cool. That's a lot to digest there, Jared. Mm. Thanks.
And buy a PC.
Buy a PC.
Because it's just something I've noticed. There's lots of people looking for people to write about PC stuff because no one does.
There you go. Hot tip. PC Hot gaming. Tip. So the last question. If you could do anything and know that you wouldn't fail, what would you do?
I'd be a pro wrestler.
Yeah?
Yep.
Heel?
Oh, yeah.
What's your gimmick?
I don't know. I feel like I could be many gimmicks. I would want to be something like... I wouldn't be the cool guy heel, though. I want to be the heel that people like buy t-shirts for still. Not like... Of course, as I feel like, half the industry... games industry writers, I mean, the media love pro wrestling. You might not know that yet, but once you start meeting these people and, like, having conversation with them, you realize all these people love pro wrestling. You had no idea. So if you did love pro wrestling and fell out, if you're going to get in the games media, it might be good to, like, watch Raw or SmackDown soon. I don't know. I love the heels who are just, like, who dressed well and rode limos and were just very upset about the fact that no one respected their limo. Like, I loved Ric Flair, obviously. Everyone loves Ric Flair. I personally am into Jinder Mahal because he's like a brown Ric Flair, just not all that good at the mic, but he's like wears expensive things and he's always wondering why people are so ungrateful for like all these great things he's done when he's really done nothing. Like, I like that about heels because they get to be delusional and funny and do like bad things, but like get to look good doing it.
Yeah. Kurt Angle was always my favorite.
Oh, Kurt Angle's like the best heel.
Yeah, and he was always like, he was almost always a heel when I watched him, but he was still my favorite, even though I was quite young and didn't really, like, I knew that I wasn't meant to like him, but I did anyway.
But the difference is, like, he got it. He understood that,
he knew he was a giant dork.
He's like a humongous dork, but he's like really a legitimate guy. Like, he really did win gold medals with a broken freaking neck, but. He would come out and like drink milk and like he would the three eyes. He was always trying to teach kids how to do the right thing, but he was just a giant dweeb. And it was great. He knew how to turn that sort of thing on its head, be creepy and sinister when he had to be, but just kind of be a goofy dude when he didn't. It was great.
And be really intense as well when he needed to. That was great. Cool. All right. Well, thanks for the chat, Jared. It's been good. It's been interesting. And I wish you all the best with your freelance future.
Ah, you too. I hear another book probably happening.
Yeah. Mm. It's, I've been working on some of that today, struggling through some writing today, but the video games are getting in the way.
Yeah, that happens.
It's
you want to be productive and you're like, but God of War, though.
I just got to put in work in between. Like, I finished a platinum God of War yesterday. So it's like, you know, I've got a couple of weeks before Detroit. So
yeah,
got to put my head down and write.
Actually do something.
Yeah. People, that will date this by a bit because it's probably not going to publish for a few weeks. But hey, a little bit of inside info. Yeah,
behind the curtain there.
Exactly. All right. Well, say hi to all the IP guys for me too.
I will. I'll tell Logan it happened finally.
Thank you for listening, and thanks to Audio Technica. That was Jarrett Green. You can catch him on Twitter at JarrettJawn, JAWN. You can read most of his content over at irrationalpassions.com. If you want to support this show, you can do that with an iTunes review or by picking up some sweet merch over at 8bit.net/PIW. That's ATEBIT. If you want to catch me on Twitter, I'm at Jono himself. And don't forget to check out the rest of the awesome podcast content from the 8bit Collective. Until next week, keep putting in work.